The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
Two very lucky people join me in studio today, Karen McDonald and Michael Byrne. Both of them are lung cancer survivors. You're very welcome. Thanks for coming in. More than 2,700 Irish people every year receive the devastating news of a lung cancer diagnosis. And while lung cancer remains the biggest cancer killer in Ireland, early diagnosis and medical advances can be critical in ensuring patients gain precious extra time. Making Moments Matter is an important campaign from the Mary Keating Foundation, which hopes to highlight just how significant extra time is in the lives of patients and survivors of lung cancer. So it's early diagnosis. And in our Cork studio, we have Dr. Dervla Collins, Consultant Medical Oncologist at Cork University Hospital. How are you doing, Dervla?
Hi, Ray.
You can hear us.
I can, loud
Great.
And clear.
Okay. I'm going to talk to Karen and Michael first, and then we'll come to you at the end, if that's okay.
No problem.
Great. Thank you. Now, Karen, what age are you?
I am now 54.
54. Michael, what age are you?
66.
66, right. Now, lung cancer, when you say it to people, they immediately associate it with smoking. Yeah. And in your case, Michael, there was a link.
There was. It's hard to give a definite answer on it, but I think there was a link,
yeah.
Personally myself.
How long did you smoke for?
Oh, God, I was smoking, we'll say, since I was about 16, 15, 16.
Were you a big smoker?
At times. I'd smoke, we'll say, in the end, actually, I used to go on a thing called Roll Your Own. And up to that, I was smoking at an average of about 40 major a day.
Right.
I went on the Roll Your Owns because it takes a lot longer to roll them and get them in your mouth.
You
see, could I spare down on a bit? And
But they don't have a filter. That's the
no,
only thing.
They don't have any filter.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah.
You know.
And eventually you gave them up?
3 years previous to the diagnosis, I decided I'd pack them in.
And in a way, that saved your life. Explain that to me.
I'll be honest with you. I packed them in and I was happy about it and the whole lot. I lost a brother of mine in 2013 to an identical twin, Sean. He had a brain tumour. And I thought that was a bad hurt and this, that and the other. So my family actually asked me to go and get an MRI on account of me identical twin getting the brain tumour, which I did, and everything was all clear. And the funny thing about it, then, three years later, I got a light wheezing on my chest. I'm a bit of a musician. I do a bit of playing at the time and singing and all this. And it was annoying, very annoying. And I said, look, I better get cough bottles and stuff like that, which didn't work at all. So my good wife, Catherine, told me to go into the doctor and get it checked in case there was something gone down on me chest or whatever, you know.
An infection of some sort, yeah.
So I went in anyway and he put me on an antibiotic. And I'd say within the space of about 3 days, 4 days, I thought I was clearing stuff off my chest. And I said, thank God that the antibiotic is working. But when I looked in the tissue, there were spatters of blood.
Right.
So that was a kind of a red rag to a bull sort of a thing. So I went straight back to the doctor. I didn't want to say too much to the family. I went back to the doctor. I told the wife, okay. And she said, go in, you might have, with the coughing and that, you might have tore something in the larynx or something. So he sent me straight there to Water Regional Hospital. And they done tests, they done an x-ray. And they came back and told me that I had a lung infection, which I was a bit pleased about.
Yeah. At the time,
that could be something they can do, something, you know.
Yeah.
So they put me on two more courses of antibiotics, one this week and a different one the following week. And then I was to go back for another x-ray. But I actually knew, Ray, at the end of the other two, that the wheezing was still there.
Yeah, there was something more serious.
So that was out of three courses of antibiotics and there was still nothing going on there, you know. So they decided then I'd have to go back to see, this is a killer in a way. They'd send you back to your own doctor then and they'll forward different information back to your own doctor and you'd have to wait again to see what's going to be happening, this, that and the other. So they decided then that I'd have to get the camera down to have a look.
Yeah.
So I got to see a lung specialist and she sent me in and she said to me, there's no other way of actually telling you. She said, Mr. Byrne, she said, there's a tumour there, she said, on the lung, on the right lung. It's about the size of a 2 euro coin. So I won't say I didn't get a fright or anything like that, but I was half expecting something of that nature. But maybe they'd be able to tell me it was benign or
yes,
whatever, you know.
And did she use the word cancer?
Oh, she didn't know. She
just she said tumour.
She said tumour.
Right.
So I took it for granted then that when she put it that way, it was probably cancerous, you know.
Yeah.
And believe it or not, I didn't even ask her, to be quite honest. I got such a fright.
Yeah, of course.
I came out anyway and back to the family and that. And I was after asking her, I said, what's the story? As regards, do I go anywhere from here? Well, she said, we'll send you to James's in Dublin, she said. And she said, we'll have a PET scan done. She said, and I said, what's the process? Well, she said, we want to find out if the cancer after going beyond the lung. If it is, she said, there won't be any operation. If it's not, she said, they'd be able to go in and take the tumour and maybe part of the lung. They won't know that, she said, until we do further tests and all that. So I went to Dublin anyway, and I will say they were brilliant in James's and them place. They were fantastic. They done the test, and the hardest point of a lot of this is the waiting in between.
Of course.
Wondering, is it there or is it here or there? But
sleepless nights, I'd imagine.
Yeah. Oh, my God. And just turn temperamental on the head and everything. You know.
You got very anxious about it.
Yeah. So I
suppose you're confronted with your mortality, aren't you?
Well, I mean, people often ask me, what was the first thing came to your head? When you say cancer, it's death.
Yeah.
That's the first.
Now, that's not the case anymore, but
no.
for your generation.
No, and a lot of people think this even to now. They do think that. But I think the whole thing of cancer and cancer in general is, I don't know why everybody should have a general check over.
Should, yeah.
At least once a year, at the least.
Mm.
Immaterially, you might see some small little things going on in your body that there might be only a hiccup. Now, I remember, actually, to the diagnosis, I remember a couple of times, we'll say within 2 years or so, I losing my voice for no apparent reason.
Mm.
And it was only afterwards, when all this was over, really, I don't mean over, but when I was a lot further down the line, knowing that I was getting good results, them little things came back to me. And
you should have acted on them at the time.
It was a sign.
Yeah, you should have acted on them at the time. So you are working on one lung now.
Oh yeah, I actually changed my name to a Chinese name now.
Oh.
They called me Mick One Lung. Right, what's that?
Karen One Lung. Karen, you've one lung as well.
I've one lung as well. Yes.
Listen to Mick, must be interesting to you, because you're a paediatric nurse and you specialise in oncology. Yeah. So when you were being told all about your own illness, did it make it easier or more difficult that you had the knowledge? You would have had more knowledge than Mick now, for example.
I'd have more knowledge than Mick, but I wouldn't have had any knowledge about lung cancer, because children don't get lung cancer.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So I was quite ignorant about lung cancer to the extent that I didn't realise that I could have gotten lung cancer being a non-smoker.
Yes.
So when...
But the odds are stacked against you being a non-smoker.
As in
the majority of people who get lung cancer are smokers. Is that
it? Has been the case.
Yes.
But increasingly people that don't smoke are getting lung cancer for some reason.
Right.
And I don't know proper statistics, but I know that in the next...
Well,
we'll
talk to Dervla about that in a moment. Yeah.
They predict that a lot more women who are non-smokers will get lung cancer.
Okay. What were your symptoms?
I didn't have any symptoms like Michael had. I had no lung symptoms at all. I didn't know I had any symptoms. In hindsight, I know I had symptoms. And the symptoms I know I had in hindsight were I had lost a little bit of weight, very marginal amount of weight, and I was really, really tired.
Okay.
I remember being in the canteen at work one day thinking, I'm sleeping more and yet I'm tireder every day. But I didn't realise at the time what that meant. And then what alerted me was I just was waking up at night time with a panic feeling that I had something wrong with my chest. And again, in hindsight, I had had in the December prior to my diagnosis, I was diagnosed in March. In the December prior to that, I had a very tiny little pain in my chest, like a pinpoint pain,
right,
which I now think must have been the tumour growing. But that was the December, and you're never going to think, if you have a little pain like that, the last thing you're going to think is, oh my God, there's a tumour growing inside.
Yeah.
But I used
but
to wake up...
But that's the scary thing as well, isn't it? That yes. It is growing inside you, unknown still.
Yes.
And the other, the positive thing is early detection leads to good outcomes.
Absolutely.
So if you get to stage 3 and 4, it becomes a lot more difficult.
Yes. So I was lucky, I was diagnosed at stage 1. And what alerted me, as I was telling you, was I used to wake up at night time just with a panicky feeling that there was something wrong with my chest. So I had nothing physical as such to go on. And this feeling went on.
But there must have been something happening there that woke you up in the first place, something physical before the mental thing. No.
There was nothing physical.
I don't understand that.
I was recognising.
Right, okay.
You were talking to that man, the undertaker, the other day, who said
David McGowan.
He's very spiritual.
Yes. So you think it was a sign, do you?
Well, I have a little angel in heaven looking after me all the time. And I firmly believe that she was...
Who is your angel?
Our daughter Rachel, who died 20 years ago now. She was 5 months old. And I just believe that she's with me all the time. And she was waking me at night time and telling me, you need to check this out. And around the same time, then I started getting a pain in my ribs on my left side. And not really a pain, just a discomfort. And that heightened my anxiety. And so I was looking for something. I felt I needed to go to the GP to get checked out. But it's very hard to go to the GP and say, I have a feeling that there's something wrong. And you don't have anything physical to
back it up.
So this feeling was going on. And I was convinced that I had a lump in my ribs then. And I kept prodding at my ribs and feeling, oh, there's a lump there. So I got my husband to check and he said, no lump. So I thought, OK, this is all in your head. You have to forget about it. So then one particular morning, I was after dropping the kids to school. I was coming back and I said, God, if there's something wrong with me, will you send me a pain to tell so that I can go to the doctor with it? And the next day then when I was at work, I kept getting this kind of a stab in the ribs all the time. And so that was my pain. That was my reason to ring the doctor. So I rang the doctor and said, can I have an appointment? And I went into the doctor and luckily she listened to me. I didn't say to her, I think there's something wrong. I didn't know what I thought was wrong. But she listened to me and she gave me the time and she sent me for a chest X-ray.
And that's where they discovered it.
So I went into Nace General Hospital and they discovered the tumour on the X-ray. It was tiny, very small tumour. As I said, stage 1. So that's why I'm here 10 years later to tell the story.
Because a lot of people can't tell the story. We'll bring in Dervla now, Dr. Dervla Collins. She's in our Cork studio. How are you doing, Dervla? You've been listening there to Michael and to Karen. Is it Mick or Michael?
Well, you could call me anything.
Okay, right. So Dervla, what are the outcomes when it comes to lung cancer?
Well, I suppose the outcomes are not very good on whole. I mean, lung cancer can present at many different stages. Generally, most people know early stage, which would be stage 1 or 2, and then later stages, which stage 3 and stage 4 is obviously when it's very advanced. I mean, the 5-year survivals in total are less than 20%. Nice. So only 1 in 5 actually gets to 5 years surviving after a diagnosis of lung cancer. The earlier you catch it, the better you have a chance of surviving. But even catching it at its very earliest stage, there's always that risk that these cancers can come back. But if the problem with this, and I think Michael and Karen have explained it really well, is some of the symptoms that these cancers can cause are really subtle and they're really hard to pinpoint and they're not obvious. And it's a real silent killer in that only, 20% of these cancers are picked up at Michael and Karen's stage.
And it's part of the problem that the symptoms can be confused with other things like you know, a cold or a chest infection or whatever.
Exactly, exactly. And a lot of 85% of these cancers are caused by smoking. So these patients often smoke. So they get these chest infections, recurrent chest infections, and they go in and out to their GP and get antibiotics, and they don't get the you know, the CT scans in order to diagnose them, because a lot of the time it is just infections. But these cancers are you know, obviously just silent, and they come on.
Yeah. And is there, as Karen says, or why is there an increase in lung cancer in people who don't smoke? Do we know?
So it's multifactorial. So it's a whole bunch of reasons why lung cancer in particular is increasing. So in women in particular, it's increasing. Now, some of that is because of smoking, and there's a lead in time, you see, from smoking to developing the lung cancer. It could be up to 20 years from your smoking exposure or the injury until you develop the lung cancer. So women really started, you know, smoking a lot more, you know, 15, 20 years ago. So we're seeing some of those cancers coming through now. But there is other reasons, environmental exposures. There's obviously the radon. There's obviously occupational hazards. And then there's just, you know, there might even be a genetic link. But a lot of the time it may just be, I suppose we call it bad luck. We just don't know why someone has developed a cancer. They don't have a reason that we can identify. And it comes down to sometimes a little bit of luck.
There are huge advances in the treatment of all types of cancer. What about lung cancer?
Yeah, I subspecialise in lung cancer, so it's a really it's a really good time to be involved in lung cancer. So, you know, if we look back 15 years ago, the 5-year survival for lung cancer was not even 10% probably. Whereas now we're starting to have much better treatments, drug like tablet treatments, but also this immunotherapy treatment where you can get a drip that actually gets your immune system to try and recognise the lung cancer and attack the lung cancer and get it under control. And we're starting to see, and while it doesn't work in everyone, and I suppose that's the key, it doesn't work in everyone, but if it does work, we're seeing some good responses, and we're seeing people with very advanced disease who are actually going into remission for much longer. So there's a lot of research, a lot of trials coming out in lung cancer, and there's a lot more options for our patients.
I see here that you deal with people maybe 4 times a week. You have to tell them that they have lung cancer.
Yeah, every clinic I have about 4 to 5 people a week, yeah.
That's a difficult thing to do, isn't it, to break that news to somebody?
Yeah, it doesn't get easier.
Yeah. I imagine people react differently.
Yeah.
What's the most common reaction? Shock, is it, or...?
So by the time, so when they come to my clinic, they usually have a fair idea, like Michael kind of outlined. They've been told by their lung physician or that they have a tumour or they've got a cancer. So a lot of the time they already know they have a cancer, and the information I am giving them a lot of the time is about the future and what they need to expect moving forward, and I suppose a little bit about survival expectations, but also about treatment options.
Okay, Dr. Deborah Collins from the University Hospital Cork, thanks so much for coming into our Cork studio today. Michael and Karen, just before I let you go, what about the Mary Keaton Foundation? How did you encounter them, Michael?
I was involved with an aftercare group in Waterford called Solace. I got a bit of depression and anxiety and stuff after my treatment and all that, and I didn't know where to turn or where to go. And I will say they really put me back on the road down there, as regards I got a bit of counselling, we joined a men's group. We took on a little bit of a project when we were able, some of us were able bodied and some of us weren't. There's 14 to 15 lads in the group. We said we'd start a garden down in the Sulla Centre, because they built onto a car park and they had some ground left over. There's some friends of ours that was up at Bloom. And
I think I met them up at Bloom.
You more than likely did.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'd make themselves known.
And how are you now? You're in your head and in your body, all good?
All very, very good, yeah.
Okay. And what about you, Karen?
The Mary Keating
Foundation? Yes, first and then...
So one of the nurse practitioners that looks after me in St. James's asked me, would I be interested in meeting with Jennifer from the Mary Keating Foundation to do some lung cancer awareness promotion. And I thought about it for a while and I thought, yes, I'd love to be involved in helping people to be aware of it and helping people to get diagnosed earlier. And I think the message I want to give is that if you do have any inkling that there's something wrong in your body, if you have subtle symptoms like tiredness, losing weight, and the cough, like Michael says, any symptoms at all like that, go straight to your
GP.
Get
it checked out.
And respond. And don't be afraid to go to the GP because, like me, I was afraid to go because I had nothing to go with. But then when I did...
You had a sixth sense.
I had a sixth sense. And I went there. And thankfully now, 10 years later, I'm really, really well. I'm able to carry on a normal life.
We have to go, Michael.
Right.
I'll get in trouble if I don't go.
Right, Gandhi.
Could you do it in 10 seconds?
Yeah. No, I just want to say these two companies, these two aftercare cup people, the Mary Keating Foundation and the Solus Crowd and all the other ones are an essential part of getting back on the road.
Okay. Well, that's important to say. Karen, thanks for coming in. Michael, thank you. Safe home. Now we'll take a quick commercial break before Nocht.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.